ready to keep you company wherever you are. Carte Blanche, the podcast, brings you immersive, hard-hitting stories anytime, anywhere, every week.
Welcome to another jam-packed episode of The Whole Week Wrap with Daily Maverick and Carte Blanche. With us this week is Daily Maverick journalist Zukiswa Pikoli. Here's what's coming your way. Out-of-control incidents of food poisoning pushes the president to address the nation. Then, violence erupts once more in Mozambique. Later, the SAPS is watching. Your TikToks, that is.
Thank goodness that criminals tend to be flashy so that they can
yes.
be caught.
And paying back the money, a major court victory for Nelson Mandela Bay. But first, as taps begin to run dry in parts of Johannesburg, some are sounding the alarm. With about 35% of the metro's drinkable water lost due to leaks and illegal connections, city management is quickly running out of road to turn things around.
Zukiswa, it's always such a pleasure having you with us. How are you doing today?
Hi, Lizanne. I'm great. Just a little bit of tiredness for end of the year fatigue, I suppose, as we all are. But overall, yes. Good. How are you?
I'm good. Also, year-end fatigue is hitting me hard, but, you know, we continue working. Now, let's chat all things water. Just from personal experience here in Joburg, I can say that I've received at least 3 different notices this past week warning us about potential water outages due to reservoirs running on empty. And this is a problem in many parts of the country. So clearly, we have a water crisis on our hands. And unfortunately, it feels like government is trying to play catch up at this stage and just failing miserably. So firstly, what has your experience been in terms of water? Has it been reliable? Have you had outages?
Yeah, I've also been experiencing these water issues. I've now even got my spare bedroom dedicated to bottles of water just in case the water is cut. And, you know, it's a range of issues from aging infrastructure where burst pipes will kind of burst and then it takes forever for them to be fixed. And there's ETAs and sometimes it isn't an ETA. So I definitely am also feeling it. I think we all are. But I think, as has been highlighted, one of the major issues is around infrastructure.
Yeah. And in terms of just what's happening in Joburg, because I think that is almost like the canary in the coal mine, so to speak, that if one of the biggest metros in the country is failing to provide water, that means that what else is happening in the rest of the country, right? And the same, as you've just said, it's due to infrastructure and lack of maintenance. And I don't really see government catching up to this very soon.
Yeah, I mean, I think in terms of government's responsiveness to that, it's been quite lacking. I think it's quite well ventilated at this point that the infrastructure needs to be maintained and upgraded. It hasn't been done so. What remains to be seen is what the action that is going to be taken around that. So when this issue of illegal disconnection specifically came up this week, where Joburg Water decided to go off to an informal settlement and go and cut off their water supply, I mean, that was bound not to end well. Right? Because what are people supposed to do if they don't have water? And as has become sort of the norm in South Africa, anytime there's an issue at such a systemic level, the first people to feel it the most are going to be the poor people, the people who are the most vulnerable, who are the most marginalized. They are the ones who feel it the worst. Because other people who live in affluent areas and are reasonably well off do have alternatives. They can get themselves boreholes. You know, all sorts of things are available for them in terms of continuing their access to the water. But what happens to the people who are not? And what is the constitutional imperative in terms of government meeting the requirements of supplying water to people? I think at this point, we need to go beyond, yes, we know we're losing the water to leaks. Yes, we know infrastructure is aging. But what is being done about it on a proactive basis? Where is the skills capacity for that to be able to be addressed in a manner that is responsive to where we are now?
I read a report by the World Resources Institute recently in which it specifically highlighted the demand for water in sub-Saharan Africa and how it's fast outpacing supply. In this report, it stated that water demand in this region is growing faster than any other region in the world. And it also states that about 60% of the world's irrigated agriculture faces extremely high water stress. And this will have an impact on particularly sugarcane, wheat, rice, and maize. So as much as we think about water outages almost kind of being an isolated thing, you know, oh, I can't bath, I can't flush my toilet, I can't wash the dishes or whatever, it also has a severe impact on our food security because all of a sudden there's not enough water to go around to keep the farms up and running. And then in turn, with that comes civil unrest. So now the big question is, as you've said, enough talk, we want more action, but what action is needed?
Yeah, I mean, this is what needs to be determined, right, by these water bodies that we actually have and the officials. It's their job to figure that out. One of the things that has been identified is the lack of water engineering expertise. What is being done to expedite that and to actually get that expertise that is needed?
Since the beginning of September this year, there have been 890 reported cases of food poisoning across the country. This, according to President Cyril Ramaphosa, as he addressed the nation this past Friday on this worsening food safety crisis. To date, 23 children have died as a result of contaminated food bought from informal vendors. Shortly after this recording, government confirmed it will be implementing measures to better regulate the sale of highly toxic pesticides, which have been linked to many of the poisonings. But until then, the risk of more fatalities remains high.
Another important issue that needs urgent action is the growing number of food poisoning cases in South Africa. We've seen various cases being reported in at least five of the provinces, but I'm sure it's everywhere. And this is clearly a crisis at this point. So what has government said regarding this?
Well, I mean, as has been in the news lately, the government has now decided to start enacting existing bylaws. The question then becomes, why were they not being enacted to begin with? In doing that now, they are actually going to be stricter in terms of enforcing the regulations that govern spaza shops, right? And one of the most dramatic things that was said is that all spaza shops must re-register. The practicality of that, though, I'd like to see how that plays out.
So as we've reported over a week ago, is we looked at the illegal sale of highly toxic pesticides in informal settlements. We highlighted Aldecarb, which is outright banned in South Africa, so you're not allowed to sell it in any way. And then we also looked at Turbufos, which has been linked to some of these food poisoning incidents. And Turbufos specifically is only intended for agricultural use, and you need a license to do so. Now, these substances are being sold openly by vendors and spaza shops in these small little packets. They're unmarked. They don't come with any instructions or any safety advice at all. And the reason why we chose to focus on this particular element of the food poisoning conversation is because it really seems that as much as government is now implementing all of these ways to better regulate food sales at spaza shops, it's not really addressing the main issue, and that is the poisons that are being sold on the streets.
Yes, that's true. Because how do those poisons make their way to spaza shop owners for them to be able to use them and be so easily accessible? It's not even just spaza shop owners who use these things. It's the general public. There isn't even an age restriction in terms of how you get it. So that's problematic in itself. But I do think another part of this issue is the fact that what are the conditions that lead people to need things that are that dangerous, right? Mm. Because there's environmental factors that are driving the issue to have those kinds of pesticides at that kind of strength, you know? And I think that for me is one of the things that also needs to be addressed in that, yes, okay, fine, you can have interventions in terms of how do you regulate the accessibility of these poisons and how they make it into shops and people's houses and all the kinds of things. But what happens to those pests in the interim? Because the issue is still there.
Protests and violent police clampdowns continue in parts of Mozambique. Following the country's October elections, unrest broke out as residents accused the ruling party, Frelimo, of vote rigging. On Friday evening, Mozambican authorities imposed a ban on all demonstrations in a bid to quell the violence.
Things have flared up again in the country this past week. We've seen some really brutal images and videos coming from parts of the country, with locals accusing the police of using live ammunition on peaceful protesters. We've seen people being shot inside their homes by police. And then by Wednesday, the Lebombo border between us and Mozambique was once again closed, and calls for some kind of intervention have been growing from various parts of the world and various organizations.
You know, what's been concerning as we've been covering what's happening in Mozambique is just the threat to democracy and the blatant abuse of human rights that's been going on. And what has been markedly missing is some sort of voice or intervention from the side of other countries within the region. You know, we are all part of the South African development community. However, I know that now there's going to be a special summit, which is going to be in Zimbabwe on the 16th to the 20th, to try and intervene in terms of what's happening there. But what's also really scary has been the fact that the issue of telecoms being just shut down, which is one of those things that's often used in times of repression by countries. Again, a clear violation of rights and flies in the face of democracy.
What struck me really is that South Africa has been largely silent on the unrest, even though it's a neighboring country. Why do you think government has opted to not speak out against what several human rights organizations have called a rigged election? And why haven't they decried the subsequent violence? So why the silence?
Yeah, I guess this is the question, right? And this is what we've been trying to find out from government. I know South Africa always maintains a position of saying that countries must resolve their own internal conflicts. But I do think as members of the same peer regional body, such as SADC, and we are all part of the African Union, we do owe each other a debt of intervention where things become particularly bad. And in this instance, issues like this will also have a ripple effect in terms of also creating a migration crisis, right? Mm. So we're already in a situation now where we are having difficulty with our immigration laws and how it is that we control that. So I think it's concerning that South Africa would be quiet in this instance. And also South Africa is seen as a leader, particularly when it comes to democracy and human rights and issues of constitutionalism. So at this point, it kind of seems like we talk one way, but we walk another way.
Also, just in terms of the ripple effect that you've mentioned for South Africa specifically, it's also having a very costly impact. We've seen this in trade. Some experts have estimated we're losing around 10 million rands per day due to the closure of the Lebombo border and various trade routes being impacted. So really, we are feeling it as well.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that would be the concern, right? It's at great cost, economic cost, great human cost as well. And I think that's not something that can be ignored.
Last week, police arrested two suspects who allegedly robbed students in Bloemfontein. What made these arrests unique is that investigators were able to connect the alleged criminals to the robberies thanks to TikTok and Instagram. In a recent interview with 702, the SAPS revealed how it's increasingly monitoring WhatsApp, Facebook, X, and other social platforms to ensure those who do the crime do the time.
So here's an interesting story that I stumbled upon, and this is via My Broadband. Firstly, did you know that the South African Police Service has a dedicated team to monitor social media platforms to really identify any potential criminal activity? Because I'll be honest, I wasn't aware of this.
Yeah, I was also quite surprised actually that they would have somebody dedicated to monitoring this. But I guess we're living in the technological and digital age, right, where a lot of things happen online. And I guess they would have been behind the trends to not be tapping into that as well, because who is not on social media at this point?
Yeah, and having read up a little bit on this unit, it was officially launched in July of this year, which again, I wasn't aware of it at all. And it was in response really to the 2021 July unrest we saw unfold in Gauteng and KZN. And the reason why the police carried on with this unit is because they saw that Having used social media footage and photos, they were able to make several arrests in connection with the violent unrest. And many of these arrests have actually led to prosecutions. So it's clearly very impactful. It's serving a great purpose.
Yeah, no, I think it's great because, I mean, like you've just rightly pointed out, you know, criminal acts are planned or executed in plain sight. And so this obviously is just another way for the police to be able to do their police surveillance and intelligence gathering in a manner that will be responsive to the kind of society that we're living in right now. And I guess, thank goodness, that criminals tend to be flashy so that they can be caught.
A landmark ruling has formally opened the door for authorities in Nelson Mandela Bay to claim back millions wasted on an integrated public transport system marketing campaign that never got off the ground. Now, as six municipal officials are forced to pay back a collective 7.6 million rands out of their own pockets, the ruling paves the way for other metros to do the same.
We're wrapping up today's show with a bit of good news, and more specifically, good news for taxpayers in Nelson Mandela Bay. This after the Supreme Court of Appeal, or the SCA, ruled that municipal officials can now be held personally responsible for what it calls intentionally or negligently enabling unauthorized, irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure. And what this essentially means is that officials can now be ordered to pay back the money out of their own pocket, which I think is a massive win and a massive move in the right direction in terms of the fight against corruption. It's such an important ruling.
Well, yeah, I say three cheers to that, because I really feel like once people start to feel the ramifications, the consequences of their actions in their pocket, they'll think twice about getting into these kinds of nefarious contracts and the siphoning off of state resources and money. It's about time that people are actually held individually liable for the transgressions that they do while they're at work. That will actually be a form of a deterrent and make people think twice before they do that.
Yes, definitely. So hopefully this will lead to government officials really, as you said, thinking twice before pushing through that dodgy tender deal or making agreements or moving money around without following the necessary protocols. But Zakiswa, that's all we have time for this week. As always, this has been such a pleasure chatting to you, getting your insights on a myriad of issues that are impacting South Africans. So thank you again for taking the time to chat to us, and I hope you have a fabulous week.
Great, thanks so much.
Thanks for listening. Catch us again next week for another Whole Week Wrap. Until then, why not join the conversation on Twitter, Facebook, and everywhere else? We always love hearing from you.